Hi, guys. I'm interrupting right now, and I do apologize for this ahead of time, but I have a new podcast called Confessions of the Idiots, where I read funny slash often weird online confessions each week to great guests. So far, including Sarah Snook, Sam Neill, William McInnes, Wendy Harmer, Judith Lucy, and so many more. The latest episode features Sir Peter Hitchener and Tony Martin.
Well, I always like the last story on the news, like after the weather.
Yes.
Does a dog on a surfboard? Always good.
Oh, nothing nicer than
nothing
that.
Nicer
or
than that.
A dog on a skateboard.
A dog doing anything,
especially
let's be real.
With one of the little back legs helping it along. They look so cute. They can have as many of those as I don't mind. They're so much fun.
And do they give you, you know, are you reading the auto cue and something like, they say it's a dog's life, but do you know, do they chuck those? Who comes up with those? Do you write those yourself?
No, those are composed by the producers.
Okay. Is there someone that's head of puns at Channel 9?
Oh, yes.
That's their full-time job, just writing.
Colin Patterson. He's very good at
They're very serious, but very stressed. I've got to have 10 puns by midday. So, guys, when you're finished listening to the debrief with the great Dave O'Neill, have a listen to Confessions of the Idiots with me, Sammy P. There's great episodes up there right now. There's 42, in fact. So you have your work cut out of you to catch up. But I believe in you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Confessions of the Idiots with Sam Peterson.
All right, yeah, we'll be in touch. Welcome to The Debrief. It's Dave O'Neill here, and I've got comedy legend Simon Palomares in the car.
Legend. I like legend.
Well, it's better than veteran.
Rather than veteran, yeah.
You know, I've been called a hack. I've been called all sorts of things. You know, but I think veteran's good. I mean, you know, I think legend's good, you know.
Yeah.
Should I take off my indicator? It's a bit annoying, isn't it? It's a bit annoying. Now, Simon Palomares has just done the Grand View, which I normally host, but I had to do the Bayswater Cricket Club. So
we do all the big ones.
Oh man!
Yeah.
Tell you what, Bayswater. It's good.
It's Netflix after that.
Yes. But look, I didn't see you tonight, but I've seen you before.
Yeah.
And apparently you're very good, Simon.
Thank you.
And like, how long have you been doing comedy?
35 years.
35.
Yeah. We started with in the same class with George Capinaras and Peter Rosethorne at Ruston, and then we started doing tryouts at La Joke.
So that must have been 1985, sort of 85?
No, earlier, 83, 82, something like that, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, we're very lucky. It was a great comedy scene in with The Last Laugh and all that sort of thing. And then we got together with a bunch of other comedians and producers, and we put the first comedy festival together.
Oh, that's right. Was that at the Universal or?
Well, we had a meeting at the Dick Whittington Tavern, and we all got together.
Dick Whitt.
Yeah, and we all got together and decided to put all our shows together at the same time.
Yep.
And just basically to save in advertising. I mean, we didn't even know what a comedy festival actually looked like.
Had any of you done Edinburgh at that stage, or?
No, Edinburgh wasn't even on the cards.
I wasn't even going.
It was going. I'm sure it was going, but it's not something that people actually went to do Edinburgh, you know. It was also, Edinburgh was more of an arts festival.
Yes, and Adelaide Fringe would have just been, if it was around, would
Adelaide
have been
Fringe, I'm not sure if it was around as it was. Melbourne, you know, there was a thing called the Spoleto Festival.
I remember the Spoleto. That was Melbourne before Fringe. The Melbourne Festival, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, before Melbourne Fringe Festival. And, anyway, look, it's been 35 years of all sorts of different things. And
so where was the first comedy festival? Did you do it at the Universal or...?
No, it was in all different venues. So it was at the Last Laugh, it was at the Universal. This was my four shows that I did. I was running my own venue at the Comedy Cafe upstairs called the Impro Club. I brought down a show called Pell Mell from Sydney, which was directed by Jeffrey Rush.
Wow.
Right?
I've heard of him.
Yep. And he went on to do some big things.
Some stuff, yeah.
So I would run in that show like 6-7 o'clock. Then I would run down to the magistrates' courts where we're doing the trial of Malcolm X, which was written by John Clark and Brian Dore, right?
Ah, yeah,
and
right.
And the guys from Lawyers, Guns and Money.
Yeah,
then, that's good. That was a big court case. Remember that thing about Malcolm Fraser when he lost his pants in a hotel in Dallas? Well, it was a mock trial about that. So the actors were the witnesses were improvising actors. and the judges and lawyers were real judges and lawyers, and we used to get cross-examined, and they used to pick a jury every night. And on the third night of that, Peter Cook of Peter Cook and Dudley Moore was the guest judge.
Oh my God.
Yeah, which is fucking like,
and unbelievable.
I was like, what, 23 or something like that, and improvising with
One of the legends.
Yeah, with Peter Cook. And on the one of the nights, I remember Carol Petullo was beating me up. She played the policewoman. She was beating me up and throwing me into the witness box, and she pulls me up. Actually, the same night, I had Peter Cook behind me, and I look up, and there is Mel Smith.
Oh, from Smith and Jones.
Yeah, staring at me in the front row. It was all very bizarre. But, you know, it was also a time. It was funny because it was like, you know, I mean, you know, people look at, you look at your mentors and all that sort of thing, and I remember the Spoleto Festival the year before when we were doing a show with Richard Stubbs and who was the bouncer of The Last Laugh who then
Colin Cole
no the other guy who then went on to produce and he married Gina Reilly.
Rick McKenna
yeah. And Rick McKenna used to have a character.
He had a character, didn't he?
Yeah he was he did a character who used to work on radio as well.
Yeah.
And one night I get to, I was doing a thing called the Aldo Tibaldi Reception Band.
Were you doing stand-up or was it more cabaret?
I was doing stand-up and, yeah. I've always done stand-up and cabaret and everything else. And one night I get to the Universal Theatre and everybody, you know, we had these envelopes in the dressing room. And I opened it up and the first line of this letter, very official looking letter, and he said, "This is a fan letter from Barry Humphries."
Oh my God.
Yeah. And he went on to say how much he enjoyed the show the night before and all that sort of thing. And I've still got it on my wall.
Still got that letter?
Yeah.
Oh, of course you'd keep that letter.
Oh, of course, because you know, you end up with some really shitty times, you know, and people tell you that you're not doing a good job or and all that sort of thing. And every now and then you just, yeah, there are little things like that in your career that you sort of hang your hat on. You go, oh, yeah.
I got a letter from Barry Humphries.
I got a letter from Barry Humphries at 22. I'd been doing stand-up for about 6 months.
Oh, that's incredible.
You know. And, you know, you sort of, and then over the years, sort of life just keeps going. And
so how did Acropolis Now, did that spring out of that live scene? Or?
No, it's, well, the thing is, oh, this is the other thing. After that first comedy festival, so from the magistrate's courtroom, I would go back and do the dishes at the Impro Club, which I was running.
Yeah.
And from there, at 10:30, I would go to the Athenaeum Theatre, Universal Theatre, where we were doing, for the first time, this little show called Wogs Out of Work.
So you were in the first thing, weren't you?
Yeah, we created it. It was Nick Giannopoulos, myself, and Maria Portesi. And that's the three of us that created Wogs Out of Work.
Maria Portesi, who's taught some of my kids at school.
She's a primary school
teacher.
Yeah.
She's hilarious, yeah. Too.
So the three of us sort of... so then this thing just sort of went off. And I remember John Pinder from The Last Laugh walking in and taking a look at the show and going, I think that thing's got legs, you know. I think you should really keep pushing it.
Well, I mean, I think I know the answer to this, but why do you reckon? Were you the first guys to actually talk directly to immigrants and their kids?
People were coming in. You got to understand how wide Australian television is.
Yeah.
And to actually walk into a theatre and see your parents, your cousins,
grandparents being depicted,
being on stage.
Yeah.
That was people just like, I think like from day one.
People losing their shit.
Oh my God. Their shit. It's like, yeah. And it's funny, I sort of resented the fact that I was never able to get that the impression that they got from walking into a theatre and seeing themselves so closely, you know, because I used to be on stage watching these people who just sat there with their mouths wide open.
Yeah.
You know,
but it was also a generation. That you got all sorts of generations coming along. You must have had, like, guys in their 70s coming along, surely.
And we had young kids. Yeah, and it was like complete families, groups of families. And so I did it for about 3 years, 4 years. And then from there, Crawfords came knocking, said, you know, do you want to do something on television? And we came up with Acropolis Now. And I was on Acropolis Now for 2 years writing. We created the series, writing, performing. And then I had enough, and I left, and off and did something else.
How many episodes did they do of Acropolis Now?
I think they did 6 series. I've got to be honest with you, I hardly have seen any other episodes after I left.
Yeah, fair enough.
I just sort of, like, put... And,
fair enough.
Yeah. And for the last 6 years, I've just been travelling around the world doing...
Yeah, so you do the cruise ships, but you also run workshops and stuff.
And... Yeah, and I work in Spanish as well.
Yeah, so you can do stand-up in Spanish.
Spanish and 4 minutes in French, yeah.
4 minutes in French?
Yeah.
It's like Eddie Izzard does French, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, I've seen him do his Spanish, and he's fucking unbelievable.
Oh, really?
He actually learns the show by rote. He actually just learns the show, and then he performs it. But it's actually, it's quite amazing the way he does it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
He was going to go into politics.
Yeah, yeah.
He'd stand for the mayor or something.
Yeah, and run 46 marathons or something like that.
Yeah, that's right.
God, my God, I'm lucky if I get up before 11. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, sure. And you were, so in between, so that's like a long time in show business, isn't it? You would have seen a lot of people leave, wouldn't you? Leave show business.
Yeah, you know, people come and go and all that sort of thing. It's interesting, you know, I just, I've really enjoyed what I'm doing without being part of any group, you know? It's it's like the sort of, there was a time when sort of like people used to ring me up to be on all the shows and you know, performing that sort of thing. And then I think around about the Rove McManus era type of thing.
Yeah, that's 90s.
Yeah, that sort of like then sort of 90s. Became the sort of like the phone stopped ringing. But of course, the thing is like the phone stopped ringing. You know, I've been a really, it's those things you can sort of spend your years sort of resuming like you know, show business isn't show business. Show business is what you make it, you know. And you can keep knocking your head against a brick wall, or you can just walk through the doors that are open. And I think for the last 15 years, I basically have just gone where people have rung me.
Yeah, right, yeah,
and
yeah.
And not basically, you know, I might show some interest in somebody that say, hey, you know, it'd be great if we ever got to work together, but not to really push it because basically, I mean, you know, with the cruise, I work for 10 different cruise lines and they're flying.
Yeah, you were one of the first guys.
Yeah, nobody was doing that.
There was one other guy, what's his name? He used to juggle and stuff and he was a friend of Dave, the late Dave Grant. Marty.
Marty.
He was doing cruise ships a long time ago.
Yeah, a Canadian-American guy, yeah. And,
how did you get onto them?
Because somebody rang and said there's a ship that's...
Because 10 years ago, no one was doing it.
No, 6 years ago, no one was doing
it. Yeah, yeah.
Right? So I was one of the first people that actually worked regularly on a ship because this ship came over and it had its own comedy club. So they kept calling me, basically because nobody else was doing it.
Yeah.
Right? They basically called me every cruise for the first year.
Yeah, right.
And it also came at a point in my life, you know, you can read this in my book when I finish reading it, when I finish writing it.
Yeah, aren't you writing a book? I read that you were writing a book.
It fuck float, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like, it was the same thing. It was like, I thought this is where comedians go to die, you know, all that sort of thing. But it was also a point in my life where my parents had passed away, my kids were growing up.
Mm.
I was really looking for what my role in my life was and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then I found this, you know, whole other world, which was the ships, right?
Yeah, right.
And then, and basically they kept calling me and they're still calling me and it's before I knew it, it was 6 years. But in between all that, the other thing is that it's actually given me the confidence to, like, I perform in front of 2,000 people every week, right? At least.
Yeah.
So,
and also very mixed crowds. Well, I'd assume in older crowds, mainstream crowds.
In one room, in one theater, all ships got great theaters, right? So there's, you know, beautifully well-built theaters. So, and the mainly about 1,000 seaters. So in that room, you've got like, you know, 400 Americans, 200 Canadians, 300 Australians, 400 British, you know, it's just all in the one room. So to actually hit all that, and to me, it's always been like a Rubik's Cube. I kept going into like different cruise lines and go, okay, I have to keep clicking this over until I connect with them.
Yeah, right.
Because the other thing
is... So do you change tact when you're on stage?
Oh, yeah, you absolutely.
Go, oh, okay, that's not...
Oh, my God. That's the whole magic of it.
You got to
look as cool as a cucumber while your brain is working at 100 miles an hour. That's the biggest
trick. It's so true. Because you were telling me last time I saw you, which is a while ago, you were doing a cruise ship off America for old Jewish people. You did
one. Oh, yeah. See, that's... I've got one... I'm not going to mention the cruise line, but I've got one cruise line, right, which is really... really the thorn on my side, right? Because the audience is so old, right? And they're,
yeah.
and they're whingy and all that sort of thing. But every time they call me, right, they send me to the most exotic places, right?
Yeah, so where are we talking? Like Jamaica?
Antarctica.
Antarctica?
Yeah, so they send me
for... So you've been to Antarctica?
I've been to Antarctica, yeah.
Do you get off the boat and walk around, or...?
No, because that ship, if you want to do that, you have to go on a ship that's less than 500 people.
Yeah, yeah, right? It's a little ship. It's not a cruise ship, yeah. really, is it?
So, but it was Ushuaia in Argentina, South Point, the southernmost city in the world. Antarctica through the icebergs for about 3 days, and then Falkland Islands, and then up to Uruguay.
But what were the gigs like on the ship?
I only did one night.
Oh, one night. And what was it like?
It was good. It was good. It was good.
Yeah.
But you know, the thing is sort of like part of that lifestyle has been a the challenge. See, I got to tell you something. My you know, reason for doing everything, and I think eventually you have to find like the one reason of why you do everything you do,
mm-hmm.
and then you know, you can and then you can do all sorts of different jobs. You can do whatever you like as long as that value is still entrenched in it, right? And from day one, my value has been to actually find the commonalities between people, right? Between nationalities.
Yeah, well, you must have found it by now, for sure.
Well, this is the whole thing. Is that every job that I do is about you know, crossing, building a bridge between different people. Acropolis Now is like that, and so on. It broke that ground in television. And what it did to me, the thing with Walk Human with me, right, is that when I walked onto a stage and there were 700 Greeks or 700 Italians in the audience. We were talking to the converted.
Yeah.
And also, I got to the point now where I just don't have anything else to say about being heavy.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I did a gig a couple of nights ago, because it's a great thing that you come back, because now when I come back, there's no pressure to make money or anything like that, because all that.
So you just have a bit of fun.
So it's just all every time I get up on stage now when I'm back home is to try out material and have fun. But I get up on stage and there is a transgender, there's somebody who's transgender, somebody who's African, somebody who's Indian, who's somebody who's Arab, and you know, it's amazing. Everybody's, you know,
it's very like diverse. Comedy's got more diverse, but it was mainly white guys when I started.
Yeah,
30 years ago.
You know, I think television is still sort of like, has got some way to go.
Yeah,
in that sense.
Yeah,
you know.
Do you find it lonely that your existence so on the road like that?
I'm not off. You know, it looks like I'm away that often, but I'm not away for months. I'm mainly
more
like
weeks.
Week on, week on.
Yeah, okay.
You know,
right.
The thing is like if you follow me on Facebook, I'm not going to put photos of my couch. I'm going to put photos of you know.
Yeah, the Falkland Islands.
Yeah, and French Polynesia.
What's the most exotic place you've been? Falkland Islands. I'd love to go there and have a look.
Falkland Islands was pretty amazing. Antarctica.
Yeah. You've obviously done South America too.
South America. Well, South America I really love because I've traveled through with doing stand-up in Spanish.
Yeah.
I go and work in Argentina. Buenos Aires got the most amazing comedy scene. Probably one of the best comedy scenes anywhere in the world.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so I've done stand up in Buenos Aires a lot. Bolivia. With the only four comics in the country, basically.
Yeah, right.
That scene has actually grown a bit more. Peru,
and
Chile.
You've been to Cuba recently.
And I've just been to Cuba to film a documentary about Cuban comedians because they've been cut off from the rest of the world for the last 65 years, right?
Yeah.
But they've got this comedy scene, right, which is fascinating because it's actually, they've got more freedom than you think, right, even though it's a, you know, tight communist country. They've got no internet,
developed in a vacuum, but probably that's probably good in a way.
Well, they haven't got the references that we have, but actually, you know, there's and we actually ended up getting access to the most popular sitcom in Cuba, which actually criticizes life in Cuba. Oh, well, wow. this is the point where I kept talking about, well, what are you allowed to say and what you're not allowed to say? And they kept telling me this phrase, which was, you're allowed to criticize the government, but you're not allowed to make fun of the government.
Okay.
Which is really interesting because, like, where is the line in that?
Yeah.
And also the other point is this. I mean, look how much fun we make. I mean, we poke the hell out of Trump.
Yeah.
And all that.
And our Prime Minister.
And our politicians. Yeah. But how much do we actually change?
Yeah.
When you look at politics now, I mean, you can make fun of, you know, Trump as much as you like. You've got 10 shows making fun of Trump every night. But what are they achieving? American politics at the moment is just, you know, beyond bizarre.
It is quite odd.
Yeah.
And so in Cuba, where do they do gigs? They just do them in bars or?
Theatres, because live theatre is still really big because, you know, people are not. And they also like talking. They're the most amazing interviewees because it's just, you ask them a question and they just go on for half an hour because they're engaged in talking to each other.
Yeah,
because
they're
not, you know, and the thing is they can see how the society is going to change.
Yeah.
When
everyone comes in.
When internet, and when everybody's just like hooked onto their phones and stuff like that. Right now, if you want to get on the internet, you buy a card and you go to a public park where there is Wi-Fi.
Oh, my God. So is there people standing around in parks?
Yeah. We're looking at their phones.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's not like, you know, because when I was dealing with them doing the pre-production, it was like it would take 3 or 4 days to get an email back. And I'm going, what the hell's going on over there, guys? And
it's just
like,
right.
You know, and then you get there and you go, oh, yeah. But, you know, they make full production films and there's a full production houses and studios and that sort of thing. And they still manage to do it. Without the internet.
Well, we used to do it here before.
Yeah.
So, but what will you do with that documentary?
I'm looking at putting it. I want to put it into film festivals and throw it around. You know, throw it around and look. I just wanted to see it. I just wanted to see what it was like, and I wanted to talk to those people.
Yeah. How many of them were there in Cuba? How many comics are in Cuba?
There were quite a few, actually. They also have a.
So there must be a tradition of it then.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and also they have a department for the promotion of humor.
Oh,
that's actually
funny.
government run.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and they run all the comedy in Cuba.
Yeah,
right. It's really quite bizarre because it's like it's so Kafka-esque, you know.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Department of the Promotion of Humor.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and we interview the director of him now, and it's interesting. I mean, it's a beautiful place.
I'd love to go there.
And the music and the cigars and you know and all those and all those sorts of things.
Have you been anywhere where they don't do stand-up comedy? Where you go?
Just about everywhere is doing.
Mexico? Do they do it in Mexico?
Oh my God, Mexico's huge.
Is it?
Yeah, because after Cuba, I went to the Costa Rica International Spanish Comedy Festival.
Oh.
And we had I was with people like all the best comics from all the Latin.
Yeah, and some of them would be like rock stars, wouldn't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean, you're talking about people, some of these people, the Mexicans, a couple of Argentinians, a Chilean lady, Valdivia from Mexico. I mean, these people are being watched because they're all doing Netflix specials.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
so
yeah,
they're,
yeah.
And they're being watched. More than the
Jerry Seinfeld,
than the Jerry Seinfelds,
yeah,
because you know you're talking about an audience of a billion or a couple of billions.
And do you find is their humor any different to say our humor?
Not really, you know. I mean, everybody's you know we're all watching, we're all on Facebook, we're all watching the same things, you know. This one interesting thing I did. I sat down with a bunch of young Cuban comedians to watch Hannah Gatsby's Nanette.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, you put that on Facebook, yeah.
Yeah, and then to sort of see how and what the reaction to that was, which is fascinating, and so that's sort of like quite an interesting scene in the documentary, and then from there, what he did is open up a whole conversation about what is truth, what would you tell? Because I mean, to me, Nanette, you know, some people call it a TED talk, or one of the guys who was watching it in Cuba was saying, oh, it's more of a TED talk than a comedy routine. But to me, what it did is actually, I mean, when you've been doing something for 30 years and somebody comes along and shows you a whole new way of doing comedy,
wow, that's
right? That's when you really go, fuck, why didn't I see, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You've actually shown me something that I thought I really knew.
Yeah.
Because that's what she does. She actually opens up takes off the back off, you know, back off the clock and shows you all the pieces.
Yes.
In the first half, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He says, this is how comedy works. This is why it doesn't work for this and blah, blah, blah. And then puts it all back together again and then just shoots you in the face with it, you know?
Yeah, she's always... I remember I did Perth with her years ago. We were both in the same venue.
Yeah.
And I watched her show, a one-woman show. But it was so good. And yeah. This was years ago.
Well, we saw... My sons and I saw her when we were doing a bike holiday through Tasmania, and we saw her doing when she was just doing
starting out
in Salamanca, Salamanca place in Hobart, right? And then we sort of like I saw her around the place, and you know she started making a name for herself, and then she came to Melbourne, and then I went on tour, and she was house sitting my house.
Oh, really?
In Clifton Hill while I went on tour.
Yeah, right.
And I came back. And the house was so immaculately clean. Oh, wow. Like there were flowers in vases.
Oh, my God.
The house was just unbelievable. It was unbelievable. You know what I did? I took photos of the flat and I sold it. Because I knew it was never going to be that clean ever again.
That's fantastic. Look, you're talking to Simon Palomares here on The Debrief. Welcome back to The Debrief with Simon Palomares. It's been a very interesting conversation. And I ask everyone these questions. What went well tonight and why, Simon, at the gig?
What went well? I'm really enjoying, trying out new stuff. There's a new gag about I do a gag which is about I talk to a young person and say, look, time goes so quickly, before you know you're going to be in a nursing home and you're going to be doing water aerobics, and during the water aerobics you're going to be doing water aerobics to songs from your era.
Oh, fantastic.
So you're going to be in a pool with 30 people going, lick my neck, lick my back, right? And I was always amazed how many people actually know that song. Of different ages.
Yeah, right. And what didn't go well? Did anything not go well?
Nothing really, nothing really goes horribly bad when we sort of, you know, unless the roof fell in or something like that.
Yeah.
It's like, you know.
You've been here for so long, I couldn't be there tonight for most of the gig because I was at the Bayswater Cricket Club. And one of the guys said, do you get nervous before these gigs? Is it intimidating? Because there's 200 blokes in the air. I went, nah, not anymore. I don't find it intimidating anymore.
You know, it's I don't find it intimidating or get nervous. I mean, you know, I get, if I'm doing a new show, like I was when I was doing the show in Costa Rica, I literally arrived there that day. I didn't know anything about Costa Rica.
Oh, yeah, that's...
And I got on stage that night with some of the best comics from all different Spanish-speaking countries. So I was actually edgy to make sure that it went well. But I'm not worrying about me. I'm worrying about them not having a good time. It's not about us. It's about them.
Yeah, it's
so
true.
It's basically, it's like you're there to make sure that they have a good time.
And how can we do better? Oh, sorry, the other question. Were any organisational hazards that got in the way?
Organisational hazards?
Yeah, well, any like the... There was a woman that has a funny laugh, wasn't there?
Oh, she was. She's
a regular. She goes off.
I thought a fire alarm had gone off at one stage.
Yes.
Yeah, because I could hear like a thunderclap of laughter, but then there was like a breaking through it. That I really thought there was like a fire in the kitchen or something
going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, but see, doing all the gigs that you would do, you would come across some weird laughs.
Yeah.
Like people, do people react differently to comedy around the world in different places, or is it pretty the same? Just laughter, clapping.
In Spain and some other Spanish speaking countries, all the big laughs, the crest of the wave of the big laugh, always finishes off in a round of applause.
So the first time I was
performing in Spain. You would get this ha 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 ha, and then you know, big round of applause from the audience, and then the comedians actually stop and take that applause.
Well, we keep moving,
or say thank you, or you know, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, right. That's interesting.
You know? So it's almost, I don't know. It's like Italians like clap every time the chorus is sung.
Yeah, right. Know, in a song. Italians also clap when the plane lands.
Sure.
Which made me laugh the first time I ever went on a plane. In Italy.
Well, you know, I'm not racist, but I do divide the world into two, you know, into people who clap when the plane lands and people who don't.
Yeah. Was there a chance we weren't going to land? Is that why they're clapping?
Right. Is it a rare thing for you guys?
How can we do better next time? That's the last question.
How can we do better next time?
Yeah.
I think it's about keeping yourself fresh and interested.
Yes.
To me, comedy has become my day job. So I use it to travel around the world, food, because I love going to different places and eating amazing food.
Yum.
And then I make good money from doing it the way I do it now. It's not the way a lot of people would do it, but it's become my day job.
It's just another way of doing it, though.
And you know when people, like, especially like judges on guests.
Oh, you said this on shows. I followed you on Facebook, and someone used the cruise ship comedian as a punchline.
I wouldn't put that on a cruise ship, right? And you go, fuck you, because what you are doing now is actually putting down an entire. I mean, when cruise ships are good enough for Cirque du Soleil.
Right, now.
Or the Blue Man Group and people like that.
Yeah.
Right? It's like it's an entire branch of show business now. Right?
Yeah,
it is the new vaudeville comedy circuit.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not getting any smaller, right?
Oh.
And I work with amazing people from all over the world, right? Because this is the other thing, it's like when we're here back home, we just keep talking to comedians.
Yeah.
Right? But when you are working with performers who are
great
musicians, you know, singers, right? Or just, I mean, you want to see good comedy, go and see Michael Bublé doing an arena show.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that guy is better than 90% of the comedians we know.
Yeah, right.
And he holds an arena show, and he's got, like, you know, 20,000 people laughing while in between songs.
Yeah, right? It's true. Billy Bragg was like that.
Yeah.
He was very funny.
Who's the guy from Men at Work?
Colin Hay.
Colin Hay. I mean, he's one of the best storytellers on stage.
Yeah. He, some of those guys could have been comics, though.
Yeah, exactly. Because they're good storytellers and they know how to hold an audience. That's basically half the job done.
Oh, that's true.
Yep.
Well, Simon, thanks for being on The Debrief. I've got to find where you live. I know you live around here somewhere.
Around the corner there.
You used to live above the shop here, didn't you?
I used to live above the shop across from the organic, from the cinema. And then I went around the corner and sort of rented a place there for a couple of years. And then I bought that place. And I don't think
I'm trying to remember when I first met you, because I do that on this podcast, but I can't. I remember giving you a lift the first time I ever saw you, was at the Werribee.
No, it wasn't Werribee. It was in
Williamstown RSL.
Williamstown RSL. And you know what? You know what?
You were great. Too.
Yeah, and we actually—it was funny because we were driving home. You drove me home that night, and it's quite quiet. And suddenly, and I'll never forget this. And you went, God, Simon, you're solid.
Yeah, you were good. Well, I'd never seen you before.
Yeah, that's it. I actually thought about it a lot. Yeah. Thinking, how can someone who's been around comedy so long, and it's because of that. I'm quite happy to not be fully part of any one scene.
Yeah. But it's always good to surprise people, you know, you know, like, fuck yeah, Simon Palomaro is really good. Mm. And Tim Smith was on that night too.
Yes.
Was making a bit of a comeback.
Yeah.
But it wasn't an easy gig. There were people having dinner there who didn't want to be there.
Oh, yeah. That's part and parcel.
That can happen, you know? Can't it?
Is it harder than, you know, 1,000 old Americans in...
I don't reckon.
I reckon you've got your work cut out for you.
All right, let's drop you home. So I'm Palomaris, ladies and gentlemen. Check him out. Follow him on Facebook. Instagram. Instagram's a new thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's all happening with Instagram. And we look forward to seeing this documentary.
Yeah, thank you.
So I'm Palomaris.
Take it easy.
All right.
Hey there, guys. My name is Sam Peterson, and I have a new podcast called Confessions of the Idiots. Now, I'm very excited to be on the Nearly Podcast Network, and I'll tell you a little bit about my podcast, because that's exactly what I'm doing right now. I'm not going to not tell you about the podcast, because that would be crazy in a promo. So I have a podcast called Confessions of the Idiots, and each week I read out different online confessions that I find online. So I trawl and I find them online, and I find all these great online confessions and I read them to fantastic guests every week. So you'll already see on the podcast there's a great one with Sam Neill, William McInnes, Wendy Harmer, Gretel Colleen, and so many other amazing guest. Now, all you have to do is download Confessions of the Idiots, and I know you guys are gonna love it. So please do listen to Confessions of the Idiots I'm Sam Peterson, and I am the host. Whether you like it or not, that is my confession for this promo. Guys, listen to it. True confessions each week. Confessions of the idiots.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Confessions of the Idiots with Sam Peterson.